Live from Kakariko Village. Broadcast throughout the Retroverse, transmitted to the real world via a maze of wires connecting the Super Nintendo to a Wii, to a Wi-Fi network, and finally to the Internet. The Techno Funk Boy presents the Retro Zoo Super Show. Here are your hosts, Kai and Steven.
Well, greetings, everybody, and welcome to the Retro Zoo Super Show. I am your host, Kai, and we have so much to do today. All right, so if you haven't checked out the last episode, we started discussing the Final Fantasy IV, the after years, and we've gone through the first several of the stories in that, and we're going to jump right back into it with the very next story. And so if you have not listened to that, you might want to, because then, you know, that's going to go through all the setup and everything. But in this episode, we're flying very quickly to the end, and trying to tackle the rest of this game. Last week, I made a comment that I did not know exactly how long the end game of this game was, and that I was wrapping up all of the tales. All of the first tales, and I knew I was coming to the conclusion because, like, all the list of tales that were offered, you know, prior to defeating all of them, were coming to a close. So I was like, well, okay, so I'm coming to the end where everybody's uniting. I did not know how long that was. This is a massive game. This is just a massive game, and I didn't actually finish it. For the rest of the game, I did have to resort to watching Let's Plays of it. I'm still playing it because I'm absolutely loving this game. Just to kind of wrap up our series here, I definitely wanted to just go ahead and at least watch the rest of the game so we can continue on with the plot. So we're going to finish this thing up today, and spoilers galore in it. So if you are interested in playing the game, and I'll kind of give my overall thoughts at the beginning, and that way you can kind of decide if you want to play it or not. But yeah, moving forward, we're going to try to tackle the whole thing.
What? You are not going to be able to finish talking about this game.
Why not?
Last episode, you got through three tales.
I know, but we were talking about, like, you know, all the other stuff on it.
There are 10 tales left.
I know, but we talked about a lot more stuff last week. That's why I'm trying to get on with it.
I do not think you will succeed.
If you don't stop... Okay, stop. Just... Okay, we... We've got to keep going. So, first of all, overall,
if you're going to do overall comments, you're definitely not going to finish the game.
I'm going to finish the game, folks. I have no idea if I'm going to be able to finish the game in this episode. We're going to see.
I do not think you will.
I think that I will. I think that I will. Okay. Overall, Overall, I'm having an absolute blast with this game. There are points of real frustration. It is not as tight as Final Fantasy IV, and there are parts that are downright infuriating. And one of the problems is one of those things is at the beginning, and we talked about this last time. In the first three tales, there are four shipwrecks, two of them airships and two of them regular ships, and it's just really kind of dumb. That is like, you know, this is at the very beginning of the game and you're just reusing the same plot device over and over again. And there's several times when you have to go into a cave just to find parts or some item in order to help you do these things. And it's like there's a real crisis going on. And we're doing like these very, very silly fetch quests. And such like that, and that's a big problem. And it's like a lot of just the real grind, you know, almost meaningless grind is front loaded, which is normally you try to get like front load like some really great plot, and to get people interested. I mean, like remember, like you know, the original Final Fantasy IV. It's like in that first opening cinematic, it's like you know we're introducing Cecil and he was stealing crystals and the king is acting weird and Cecil's conscience is getting to him. And then he and Kane go to Mist and they blow up the town of Mist unknowingly. And then they're trying to save this girl and she panics and brings a mountain on top of him. Now Cain is lost. Now Baron is after Cecil. Now Rosa is trying to find Cecil and she gets sick. And now the Red Wings are bombing Damcien. And it's like all of this like craziness is happening right at the beginning of the game. And it's like it's really like this just momentum thing that gets you going. And that really doesn't start slowing down till well after Cecil becomes a paladin. And by that time, you are just so tied in with everything. You're sold out. This is great. This is just incredibly good story and characters. And this game does not have that. I mean, you know, it's the Cedar's Tale is pretty cool, but you start off doing a meaningless mission. It's a fetch quest. It's hey, go prove yourself worthy by going to find the thing. Go find the thing. And that's how this game starts. Once you do that, then things kind of pick up a little bit. But then, the sequence with Cecil's really, really cool. But then the airship crashing and that's pretty good plot, and the hooded man and that's pretty decent. But then you get these like just nameless mages to go with you, and it's like, okay, all right, that's fine, and it kind of drags. And then you get into Rydia's Tale and the whole thing just drags and it's not that good. And Yang's Tale, it's like, it's a really cool forest that you're in. It's very, very cool. And the relationship between Yang and his daughter Ursula is really, really cool. But the thing isn't all that interesting. And so now we're going to get to Palom's Tale. And Palom's Tale I really, really like. But I also get very, very frustrated with it. At least the front end of it. And so this is kind of where things... We're not really picking up any speed, and this is one of the real problems with the game, is this whole chapter structure is really interesting because you get all these different characters and their relationships, but you never get to get really deep with these characters. You know, you don't advance very much. I remember when I was playing Edward's Tale, which is well into the game, you know, and I was going in order that they have it listed. Edward's Tale, and it's like, man, I really feel like all these characters should be hitting harder than they are, because I've been playing this game for untold hours at this point. And all these characters are still like level 18. Why? Well, it's because we keep jumping chapters. And so we keep going back to level 15 and starting over. And then by the end of the chapter, that character's up to, you know, somewhere between 20 and 30. And if you do the challenge dungeon, you can get it even more. I didn't even get into challenge dungeons, but it's just extra dungeons for the game. Just to get some extra items and such. No plot significance. But then you start over in the next one. And that is a point of frustration. It's like you're getting to the meat of the game and then it's cutting away. And that is a big, big frustration. That being said, I absolutely loved all of these tales except two. And even of those two, one of them, Edward's Tale, has an element that I really, really liked. But a lot of the ones that I actually liked have elements to them that I don't like. And that's not something that I could say about Final Fantasy IV. You know, that's like you've dived in so hard in that game, and you start off at a sprint, and it does not let up for a long time. And this game is a plodding game. You know, it's about kind of a steady walk all the way through. Now, I said before I said all that I absolutely love it. And I absolutely love this game. That the plot as a whole, the characters, I love the music, the, you know, returning to this world, seeing what's going on, like all of the twists are really neat. The tension becomes really, really good. And so we're going to jump back in with Palom's Tale and start in on that. So I mentioned before, the front end of Palom's Tale frustrates me because they're like, they need to burn some time. And, you know, and I haven't seen exactly like the timeline of how all of these stories interact. They do interact, like you run into other events that is happening elsewhere, but it's very, very clear in this one that they needed to burn some time because he gets on a ship and the ship just has some problems and takes it doesn't crash like in the other tales, but I guess it gets in the current wrong or has a big hole in the sail. I don't know what the problem is, but it takes weeks to get over to Troia. So the point of all of this is that Palom has been working his whole life since the first game to become a sage like Tella. And he has been sent. He has been sent by Mysidia to Troia to help train a young priestess in black magic. And so this whole thing about the ship is really kind of weird. And it's just trying to get. I really think it's just trying to get things on the right timeline. And it's kind of awkward, But Palom is being just an utter jerk to all of the sailors and is being a punk. And so they get to Troia, where he meets Leonora. So Leonora is studying to be in one of the leaders of the city in Epopt. And she is skilled in white magic, but she has an inkling toward black magic as well. And so Palom is going to teacher. And so there's this kind of meaningless quest through this tower that, you know, to help train her. So you're climbing up this tower and she's learning spells on the way. And so when they get back after all of that, the mysterious girl, what you'll remember from last time, is attacking the city to obtain the crystal. And Leonora, they take the crystal and they take this underground passage to allow them to escape. They go up north and capture a black chocobo and go to the Lodestone Cavern. This is the Dark Elf Cavern, you'll remember from the first game. And this is where it's like, okay, we can defend ourselves here. Yeah, you know, they've actually added some, you know, some secret passages and stuff that is going to help protect them from from the soldiers from Baron that are being led by the mysterious girl. And so, of course, because a lot of this game does like mimic the original game, they end up battling the dark elf, because it's something to do with the thing and the crystal and the thingy, has allowed the dark elf to escape again. But, the battle is ended by actually the mysterious girl, who has come to try to take the crystal. This is actually where this story becomes really, really cool, because Palom then steps forward and grabs the crystal and tells Leonor, get out, and then kind of clutches it and turns himself into stone. And it was that, that kind of moment, that return of the self-sacrificing Palom, that renews that connection I had with the character that I love so much. And the twins are two of my favorite characters from Final Fantasy IV. I absolutely adore them. And in seeing that in now Palom, who has been kind of an arrogant jerk, but I guess a noble arrogant jerk, it's a reminder of that nobility in him. But Leonora is also someone who's willing to sacrifice and willing to step forward. And when the mysterious girl says, okay, well, I'll just destroy Palom's body to get that crystal, Leonardo recognizing that is a way that the mysterious girl will actually get the crystal, and hey, this crystal is going to be hers anyway, does heal Palom and hands the crystal over. Leonardo then reveals that she actually grew up with, they've known each other from childhood, but Palom didn't recognize her. And so, like, if you remember back to the closing credits of Final Fantasy IV, the Elder is looking for Palom, but can't find him. And so he sends Porom out, and Porom finds Palom, by the river, like, bragging to this young girl about all the things that he's done in this adventure. Well, Leonora reveals that was her. And they recreate that scene where Porom finds him and whacks him on the head like she always did, and it's just this like really wonderful, it's really, really cool how they kind of brought this unnamed, unspeaking character from the first game and brought in how she had been actually affected by the tales of this brash young boy, and so the two of them combine together to try to push off the mysterious girl, which of course is not going to work, and they don't do well. But the scene flashes then over to Mount Ordeals, where Porom is, and she has encounter Kane, but she stops and she senses that something has happened to Palom. And that is when we jump over to Edge's tale.
We have a call.
We cannot have... Okay, hold on one second. Hey, you're on the air.
Hey, Kai, it's me, it's Matt Rangel Robinson.
Rangel, wait, I'm... Okay, this is like super busy episode.
I know, I got all the data that you wanted. I've gotten it all out, and I'm ready to do my report.
Wait, what?
My report. You asked me to do a report on how, like, retro games are affecting the market during the holiday season. Like, you know, it's like all these great games from the past, if they're, you know, that... if there's like having like this revival this Christmas season, and if we're actually finding sales of great old games.
Oh, Rangel, that's right. I did. Oh no. Oh, I did tell you that, Rangel. I'm sorry. We are doing the after years right now.
Well, it's okay. Just stop wherever you are, and we'll tackle this report. I've spent a long time just reviewing all these numbers and making sure they're right. I didn't want to disappoint you. You gave me a special project, and I wanted to do it right for you.
No, Rango, we told everybody we're going to finish the after years this episode. Can't we, let's postpone until next week.
Well, I mean, none of these numbers are going to be accurate next week. That was kind of the point. It's, you know, it's Christmas season and sales change day to day. I actually woke up about 3:30 this morning just to make sure that I got up to date numbers on everything you asked for.
Yeah, Ringo, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but we're doing the after years, and I already told everybody like that we're gonna finish up. I feel really bad, and I'm sorry. But why don't you go ahead and update those numbers for next week, and we'll see if we can do it then.
I guess that will be fine.
Great. All right. Thank you, Rangel. All right. So let's jump over to Edge's Tale. Now, Edge's Tale is actually super, super cool, and very, very different from the other ones. Edge is king, and it's like still in Eblin, like everyone takes things more seriously than Edge does. You know, it's like everyone is being more formal than him. He's very casual. He's just like, I don't care. But he's also like training these ninjas, the Eblin Four, and each one is tied with this element. And Edge, figuring out something is wrong, is decided to send out these four to figure out what's going on. And so we get a much, much shorter, like a sub chapter for each one within the larger chapter of Edge's Tale. And this chapter is pure comedy, but it actually has a lot of punch and is very, very cool. So Gekau is one of them. So he is over in Fabul, and he's like sneaking around the monks there. And this is where you remember in Yang's Tale, this meteor has hit. And when Yang goes down into it, he finds like the burial site for several of his monks. Well, those are the monks that Gekau is following to find out what's going on with this meteor. And he witnesses them being attacked by the mysterious girl and dying. And it ends with him seeing the Tower of Babel is lighting up again. So Gekau was pretty cool. He's like, he's this big kind of bulky guy, and he is like the fire elemental of the four. The next one that we're going to follow is Sengetsu. And Sengetsu is the oldest of the four. And he's very formal and loyal, and he represents lightning, but he has gone down into King Jiat's castle, the dwarves, to help follow them around and see what's going there. So much of this chapter is just pure comedy, and like he keeps misquoting. He keeps, when everybody's saying lolly ho, he keeps saying something wrong. And when everybody, you know, all the dwarves do their massive jump, he can't jump as high as them, and so they're always really worried about him and think he's sick and such. But he. After he's kind of built himself in with this group, he notices that the Tower of Babel has reactivated. So he goes through the secret tunnel to get up to the surface, and then walks across the water to get home. That happens a lot. And this Izayoi is my favorite of the four. And she is like, she's the water elemental of the group. And she is just like so so gung-ho, and there's like this one hilarious part where she gives Edge like this entire speech about how she no longer wants to be known as a woman, she just wants to be known as Ninja. And Edge is like, okay, I don't know what you're talking about, lady. And they don't even really seem to get mad at the stuff Edge says, but just accepts it as, yes, okay, we will do this now. And she is so focused. But she goes over to Troia, and she disguises herself as a girl as a trainee for the Epops, and so she's like doing these like you know, classes about, you know, grace and poise in the water, and of course messing everything up. And this is one of the things that I can, you know, about these stories intersecting, is that she can actually talk to Palom there while she's wandering around. She notices that Palom and Leonora are going over to this tower to train, and so she decides that she's going to climb up the outside of the tower to figure out why in the world that Troia has built this weird thing. And so she climbs up the side and she fights up, and then when she gets to the top, she notices that the Tower of Babel has reactivated. So you notice the theme, right? That this is the thing that just keeps on going. Sukenawa is the last of the four, and he is he's by far the youngest, and he is the wind elemental. And this character is just fantastic, because he is sneaking around Mysidia and trying to figure out what's going on, and he gets one of these people around town to turn him into Toad, with which people in the city will do sometime. And so as a Toad, he sneaks into the Tower of Prayer, is spying on Porom and the Elder, and Porom is being sent up to the Mount Ordeals for some reason, but he's not sure why. Sukenawa follows and heads up Mount Ordeals. And then when Sukenawa gets to the top, he finds the stone monuments, but he's completely lost Porom. And this is what we'll find out later, is Porom has gone into the monument at this point. But, you know, you can't just do that, right? And so he sees, you'll never guess it, he sees that the Tower of Babel has been we'll get into this, because this is the worst part about this chapter, is that these ninjas have such great, each little section is like a whole different chapter in and of itself. It's really, really cool. It's really, really cool. It's hilarious. A lot of this stuff are the funniest moments in the game. You know, seeing Sukenawa, you know, hide in the Elder's room as a Toad is fantastic, and stuff like that is just really, really great stuff. But it's like none of them actually find out any information, and that's such a bummer, because you've sent out these four ninja spies, and I would have loved to have really dug into some really usable information that each one comes up with. Now, if you die in any of these chapters, it just moves on to the next chapter. And I didn't continue. I died once, but I didn't. I just went back to the save point because I wanted to succeed. But it seems like at that point that, you know, you just won't rejoin Edge at the end, and it'll still be harder on Edge. But it's like I wish they had found out something, because then we return to Edge, and Edge notices. Obviously, he notices the Tower of Babel for himself, because, my goodness, I mean, it's right next door, you know, And so he goes through the tunnel, and there's a lot of reminiscing about his parents and stuff like that. And he gets a vision of Rubiconte, but he keeps going. And then one by one, he's reunited by his ninjas. And then he gets to the top where he finds the mysterious girl. She summons Ifrit to stop him, and they just like, nope, we're leaving. And and Edge is like, no, we're going this way, and you flee. And it's like this great scene of him fleeing, and then every once in a while Ifrit will drop you into a battle screen, and you'll need to run from the battle again. And when he's asked about it, it's another funny part, is when he's asked about it, it's like, what's going on, where are we going? We can't get out of this tower. And he's like, no, I know what's going on, and history is repeating itself, and we're going to find an airship right through this door. And they open the door, and there's no ship there. And he's like, oh no. And then the mysterious girl comes in, and Edge is like, okay, no, this isn't going to be a problem. Everyone jump. And they all jump, and then they land on an airship where Rydia and the man in black are there. And that's where Edge's tale ends. So this was like one of the most fun tales, and it's just for the comedy value of it. It was like a really great breather. We were five tales in, and you really kind of needed this breath of fresh air. But you didn't spend a lot of time with each one, and so you didn't actually level all these people up anymore. This is where like a challenge dungeon would be helpful to grind them a little bit and get some items and such. But we're not going to go through those because we have to move along, because I've only gotten through two tales and we should be halfway through the podcast episode. So let's take a quick break while I take a drink, and then we can go on to Porum's tale. Hey, this is Phil from Phil's Gaming Emporium, philsgamingemporium.com. All of this talk about Final Fantasy IV, do I have a deal for you? I was going back in my back stock, and I realized that I have a misnumbered Final Fantasy IV game. It is misnumbered as Final Fantasy II, but that is impossible because Final Fantasy II came out before the SNES was even existing. So it's now your chance to get this highly prized, very, very rare, misnumbered Final Fantasy IV game. It's misnumbered as Final Fantasy II for the low, low price of $3,000. Head on over to philsgamingemporium.com. Welcome back. Okay, Porom's Tale. All right, so this, I loved it. By the way, I love this chapter, but it's a little frustrating because it focuses so much on Palom and not Porom. But it starts actually years and years and years ago, and Porom and first of all, Palom again, he's already trying to follow in Tella's footsteps and become a sage, and the elder agrees. It's like, okay, go do your thing. And so Palom's like, okay, well, I'm gonna go walk in his footsteps. And Porom decided to go with him. So they first go to Kaipo, where they visit Tella's grave, and then they go through the underground waterway, and you fight the octopus at the end, and there's the waterway scene. It's very, very similar to the original there. It's actually a pretty hard fight. I died once in that one. But then it cuts to a few years later where they're going to visit Rydia, and carried there by Cid on his airship, because they couldn't go through the Devil's Road. And Palom asks Rydia to take him to the land of the Eidolons, so that he can learn more about magic. And so they visit the dwarves, and Luca comes along, because Luca's got a thing for Palom. But as soon as they get to the actual portal that will take them to the land of the Eidolons, Rydia says, no, you can't come in. you know, this is, you know, time works differently there. It's very, very weird and blah, 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 and all that good jazz. And she goes in, but when she comes out, she says that, you know, it's like, okay, you know, they won't even let me in. And so, it cuts now to the present. And now Palom's already left for Troia, right? And so finally, we actually get to follow Porom a little bit. And she's talking to the Elder, and the Elder picked Palom for this mission instead of her. She, you know, and she's surprised at that, but she's trying to become a little bit more independent and such. But they're interrupted when they suddenly witness the lunar whale coming out of the whirlpool by the town and just flying off into space. And of course they panic at this. And so they decide, okay, we need some help here. We need to start gathering some strength. And they decide, well, hey, look, Cain is still on Mount Ordeals, last we heard. And so let's go find him and see if he can help us. So they go over to Mount Ordeals, and they send a black and a white mage with her. And they go on to the top. And when they get to the monument, Porom can hear the spirit of Cluia, Cecil and Golbez's father, speaking. And she is able actually to go in the monument, but she finds that all the glass inside has been shattered. It's like destroyed. And you'll remember, like, she was witness to what happened in that room before. And so she knows what it is and all. It's just like, oh, okay, what's going on? And so they're coming off of, they decided, okay, we're going to leave. And they're attacked by some monsters that are too strong for them. And Cain swoops in to save them. And they're like, oh, great. Cain doesn't seem all that interested in helping until Porom reminds him that, you know, he's like, Baron is your town too. And he's like, okay, I'll come. And so they go down now to Mysidia. But they find that Mysidia is now being attacked by the mysterious girl who's trying to get that crystal. The Elder and Porom are trying to fight off the mysterious girl, but Cain comes in with this crystal and offers it to the mysterious girl, in exchange for, you know, the ability to see Cecil. And the mysterious girl is like, okay, and that's fine. Yeah, let's go. And, Cain takes the crystal and leaves. And that is the end of Porom's tale, which is barely about Porom at all, which is kind of a frustrating point, but it really was, a lot of it was really, really fun. And again, we're going to return to this refrain, like the beginning of each story doesn't really advance the plot any, you know, these dungeons are cool, but it doesn't advance the plot. And so this seems to be one of those cases where this Porom's actual story of going up to Mount Ordeals to get Cain is just too short to actually sell it. And so they needed something different. But I still like that chapter. The next chapter I do not like. And that's Edward's chapter. Big surprise, right? Because Edward is not the best character in Final Fantasy. But we cut over to Damsian. It's been rebuilt, but they're having like a little bit of a financial crisis, and the Chancellor can't get in to see Edward because he's refused all visitors. And so his secretary, Harley, just says to the Chancellor, well, okay, I'll go talk to him about this. And she goes in, and he's standing in the corner of his throne room playing the harp and being whiny. And it's been like 20 years, Edward. It's been like 20 years. And I know you never quite get over the death of a loved one, but you are the king of Damsian, and you should be like actually paying attention to things and not being whiny all the time. And so, in the course of all this, Harley, they witness the meteor coming down that, and it lands in between Fable and Dancian. And so Harley's like, well, no, I'm going to go check this out. And he's like, okay. But then some time goes by and she does not return. And so Edward's like, oh no, I'm going to go look for her, and take some soldiers with her. And they go down into the meteor, and, they find her and, essentially bring her back. Worthless dungeon number one. When they get back, Damsian is being surrounded by the Red Wings, and they are there to inform Edward that he needn't worry about the meteor, that Baron is going to investigate thoroughly for him. And Edward doesn't like this, and he also doesn't like that Cecil didn't come to ask him this personally. So he's like, well, no, we're gonna go to Baron to talk this out. And so they go through the waterway. Now, you have two questions already in your mind. I know you do. First of all, how do you build, in a medieval society, how do you build the capital castle of a nation in a completely landlocked place where you have to go through a dangerous cave to get to a port? That's dumb. That's just dumb. The second question is, and this is something you might have wondered from the first game, if this is the only path between Kaipo and Damsian, how do you traverse that, like, ever? Because you have to, like, dive down a waterfall, and you can't, like, swim up it. Well, this solves it, because they've put a cave. They've like, put it like a cave in, you know, through the back of the waterfall that goes down to the bottom. It's like, okay, great. So you can walk up the waterfall to Kaipo. And that's great. And, you know, again, worthless dungeon number two. Because if Damsian had just been built like a normal place would have been, and had some sort of access to a port. I know they have the fire crystal, and so that's why it's all deserty. But still, it's like building in a place that you can at least walk to a port and not have to, you know, climb up a waterfall for it. But once they get there, Harley falls ill to desert fever. And so, of course, I'm like, are we serious here? Because the antlions are on the other side of the water. But the waterway, right? Well, that night, this Edward is, you know, at the graves, and he encounters the spirit of Anna and Tella. And Tella's explained that Anna wants him basically to move on, and that he should, you know, like, not be all mopey about her like 20 years later. And so, morning comes. Thankfully, there wasn't a battle there with the water hag, but morning comes, and sure enough, you're going to go back down the waterfall the whole way. Worthless dungeon number three. And you pick up the sand pearl from the antlion. And thankfully, you don't have to fight an antlion, because frankly, your party is, this is the weakest party you have. I mean, this is the super weak party, where Edward is your big damage dealer in this worthless party. And that should tell you a lot, because Edward is not a damage dealer. So thankfully you don't have to fight an antlion. But then you go through the waterway again. I'm not even joking. But this time, because the developers knew that you're probably getting tired of this dungeon. And keep in mind, we already went through this dungeon in the last chapter in Poron's Tale. And the developers are realizing, like, you know, we put these guys through this. So once you go in to the waterway, you're like attacked by these bandits, but you fall off the bridge and you end up on the other side of the waterway. Well, you might be realizing the problem there, because Damsian is on the low end of the waterfall. Kaipo's at the top part of the waterfall. And so you literally just fell up the waterfall. I'm not joking. these are things that happened in this chapter. And so anyways, you give it's a worthless dungeon number four, at least the ant lion den. It advanced some plot, even though it was not the plot of the actual game. It was just the plot of this, you know, this love affair between Edward and his secretary. And at this point, you're like, please, Edward, just please go out with your secretary because it's been like 20 years, man. So they're like, okay, we're going now. Harley's recovered, and so we're going to go to Baron. Back when they first left Damcyan, Edward picked up some whisperweed from the castle and takes it with him, and he gives it to Cecil when they meet. And Cecil's really kind of acting strangely, like he is with everybody. And Edward's like, you know, you probably should have come and told me this yourself. And Cecil's like, well, I'm sorry, whatever, you know. And he leaves him the potted plant of whisperweed, and they get back into the ship. And Cecil's like, you know, okay, well, by the way, you know, I got you a gift, and he gives him a package. He's like, okay, well, great, thank you. And they get on the ship, and Edward's like, I'm not opening that gift. That's dumb. And Harley's like, why? Because that's not Cecil. Because if that had been Cecil, he would have known what I had given him. And he reveals it is Whisperweed, which allows him to hear from great distances. You know, this is the actual version of what was in the SNES original, the twin harp. But this is the more proper item in the game. And so he starts eavesdropping on Cecil and realizing that Cecil is plotting with the mysterious girl. And so, they start heading, toward Damcyan, and they see that Yang, his ship, is being swallowed by Leviathan in one of those kind of crossover points. Okay. Cain's Tale. So you'll remember in the first part, like Cain's Tale in the Wii version, Cain's Tale and Cedor's Tale were put together. And I kind of liked it because it just made this like really kind of initial punch to the game that this version of the game is lacking. That there's nothing that like truly, truly, truly important that happens for a long time in this version of the game. But when you got through Cedor's Tale in the Wii version, it's like, oh my goodness, this is crazy. But it is kind of cool to see Cain from everyone else's point of view, through the game, and then figuring out what happened to him. So we're jumping over to Cain. So we're over at Mount Ordeals, and Cain has been on Mount Ordeals for this 18 years or 20 years or whatever the case may be. But he is like now, like hasn't been able to get into that monument, into the room there, whatever that room is. And he's like, he's been just searching for this in vain, and it's just not working. But he finally hears a voice, and he goes in, and he's finally allowed into the mirror room, and he encounters the dark part of himself, but he loses. He loses the fight. And in losing the fight, the mirror shatters, and Dark Cain emerges. And so that is the Cain that meets Porom and then makes the deal with the mysterious girl, because he wants to kill Cecil. And so he gets to Baron, and the mysterious girl is waiting for him, but she tells him, you know, well, we're going to alter the deal a little bit because I am still missing a couple of more crystals besides the one that you're already carrying, and I want you to go get those for me. And then Cecil is yours. And so he's like, okay. And starts toward Fabul first, I think. But then it cuts over to Seador. Now Seador's with the Hooded Man, you'll remember. And they have just crossed the mountains above the town of Mist. And now they're going over to Kaipo. When they're in Kaipo, again mirroring the original game, they are attacked by Baron soldiers, but this time they're just zombies. And so they're not fighting. I mean, they're not like doing the things that they should be doing, you know, as like soldiers of Baron who are attacking the prince. All right, so then they decide, okay, we got to get over to Damsian. And so they go through the underground waterway. I'm not joking. So in Porom's tale, we went through it once. Then in the next chapter was Edward's tale. We went through it three times. And now the very next tale, it's Cain's tale. And we're going through that stupid waterway again. Oh, these are where the frustrations start. But they get cut then to Damsian because the Red Wings have already arrived there, and Cain is there, and he is trying to get the crystal, but Edward tells him no, and it's revealed that Rosa's there with him. And so he's about to take it by force when Edward grabs that package that Cecil had given him earlier and opens it up, and the entire throne room just explodes into fire, just wiping out all of the Red Wing soldiers and leaving just Cain and then on one side and Edward on the other. And Cain defeats Edward, takes the crystal and also Rosa, and hightails it out. This is when Cid is arriving with the Enterprise, and right about the time that Seador and the Hooded Man are arriving. So they are all going to go to Baron together. They're following Cain, and it's like there's this race into the throne room, and they're following Cain, and they finally encounter him in the room right before the throne room, the room where Palom and Porom had once had to stone themselves to stop the walls from crushing. And that's when they encounter Cain, who's dragging Rosa in. And this is when it's revealed that the Hooded Man is the light half of Cain, whereas the Cain that we've been following has been the dark Cain. Cain, we'll start referring to them as Cain and dark Cain. Cain has come to this realization that Cecil innately understood in the first game that there had to be a repentance, and they had to be an understanding of what had been done, and while there was a rejection of it, there was also an owning up to it and repentance for it. And Cain had never done that. He wanted to just bury his past. He wanted to bury the wrong things that he had done and just kind of start over. And in suppressing that, he was never able to conquer the darkness in himself. But now that he has done that, he is transforming into a holy knight. And he and dark Cain now fight. Cain, the real Cain, our holy, not our holy knight, he turns into a holy dragoon. And his new sprite is so cool. It's so cool. But he defeats his dark side, and he finally admits what was driving that dark side, and it was jealousy. It was jealousy of the relationship of Cecil and Rosa, and that's why dark Cain wanted to kill Cecil. It's because of that festering jealousy there. And so now, free of that, Cain now leads this new party into the throne room, with Seador, with Rosa, and Cid. And now they're face to face with Cecil, who is standing next to the mysterious girl. So that is all of the chapters that are available to you right away. But then a new chapter opens up, and it's the Lunarian's tale. Now we go into the depths of the moon, of the second moon, and Golbez is being awakened, and you're in like this whole, like, you know, sci-fi mechanical thing where all the Lunarians are in this deep sleep in these stasis chambers. But Golbez realizes that Fusoya is gone, and so he goes to the surface, and Fusoya's like, you felt this too, huh? And so they go out to investigate. So the first thing is they find this meteor that has struck, and they go to the bottom of it, and they find the mysterious girl, and they battle her and defeat her. But she, you know, she had summoned a monster, and so they're like, well, goodness, okay, we probably need to figure out what's going on with that. We need to go talk to Bahamut. And so they go to his cave, but he has been turned to stone. So now they're kind of in a panic, and so they go back to the Crystal Palace, but they find the mysterious girl back again, and then she fights them again. But now she's escaped, and she's going down into into the underground. And so they go back down through the lunar underground, and they go down to the very, very center where the mysterious girl has resurrected Zeromus, and Golbez and Fusoya begin to fight them. And when Zeromus is starting to use all this magic, and the whole place is beginning to just start coming apart. But previously they figured out, like, okay, Fusoya specifically figured out, it's like, okay, this is going to take some doing, but we're going to have to do this in a certain way. And he has summoned up the lunar whale from the blue planet. And that's where we cut over to Mysidia, where they've witnessed it to taking off. And so right in the middle of this battle against Zeromus, Fusoya senses that the lunar whale has arrived, and he teleports Golbez onto it to finish off the battle himself. And Golbez is now on the lunar whale and is heading toward the blue planet, all the while having like these flashbacks of the first game, as you know, he's like in kind of a panic of going back to this place where he did not think that he was going to be forgiven. So this is kind of essentially where I was last week, and I didn't know how much time I had left in the game. I have a lot of time left in the game. For our purposes, this part doesn't actually have a ton of plot to it. So we are going to be able to get through this part.
We are coming to the end of the program.
No, we're going to extend the program just a little bit. Stop it. So now we have kind of gotten into two different parties. We have Rydia, Luca, Edge, and Golbez are now together. And then we have Siador, Rosa, Cid, and Kane, who are in Cecil's throne room. Now, that party we're not going to deal with until we're ready for the battle that is going to end this section of the game. But it is going to kind of keep flashing back to that. And so it's kind of cool. So, but right now, the moon is starting to get closer, and all these meteors are just coming crashing down onto the surface. And it's just, it is turning the planet into Swiss cheese. And so our team goes out, and they're trying to kind of put things back together. you find Yang and Ursula over in the first thing you do is you go to Baron's castle, but it is being protected by this force that's being kind of generated by these mind controlled Eidolons. If you head over to Mist, and then kind of the ghost of Rydia's mother will explain that to you. You've got to free the Eidolons, and that will break the seal. And so then comes your quest. So some of this part has to do with like gathering people. All right. Oh, I forgot. Edward is still with Theodore's party. Why do I keep forgetting it? Oh, I know why I keep forgetting Edward. Never mind. But he is there. So you do find, like, if you go to Kaipo, you're going to find Yang and Ursula there. I'm not going to tell every part of all of this. It's kind of just a free-for-all where you go and what you do. And it's really, really, a lot of really, really cool stuff here. And we won't go through all of it, but this part is worthwhile because if you, you're going to find Yang and Ursula and they're passed out there. But if you go to Fabul, if you go talk to Yang's wife, Sheila, she's going to give you a frying pan to hit Yang in the head with, like she did in the first game. But she also gives you a ladle to hit Ursula with. And in Edge, trying to be a little cheeky, goes, you know, well, do we get a knife again too? And Sheila's like, oh, I'm out of those. Did you lose the one I gave you? And of course we did. We threw it in the last game. It was it's hilarious. But if you go back and you whack them over the head, then they'll wake up. The sylphs, so like they've been mind controlled and they're all over Fabul and also in Kaipo. And if you talk to them, they'll fight you, but you don't want to do that because once you wake them up, the love they sense between Yang and his daughter kind of brings them to their senses and they return to Rydia because of that. The rest of the ones that you're going to find all have this like just really cool elemental element to them. And so if you go to Troia, the whole place is just like covered in ice. But if you go to the Lodestone Cavern, you'll find Shiva there. And so you'll be able to fight Shiva. And the thing with these battles is, like, if you fight them, then they're going to get to the point where they regain their senses, and then you want to stop fighting them because then they'll rejoin Rydia. But you can kill them at that point as well. if you go to Eblin, it is being engulfed by Ifrit's fires, and as you wander around, it's kind of like in the Tower of Babel where Ifrit was chasing Edge, and he'll do the same thing to you here. And you don't want to fight him. He's just like constantly battling you and taking you out. But then at some point, Edge is trying to shuffle everybody out. So he's like, oh, I'll take on Ifrit. Y'all just go. And Rubikante reappears to him and actually starts helping Edge, and not like in battle, but giving him clues and just like giving him a little bit of a pep talk. And so in that moment, Edge and Rydia are able to do their band together, be able to defeat Ifrit using Rubicon's Inferno skill, which is kind of cool because Rubicon keeps like, you know, appearing to Edge throughout this game, and like that connection between the two like lasts from the first game. And so in Mysidia, you're gonna find Ramu, and which is. Is one of the less interesting areas, but it is still pretty cool. But in Agard, that's where you're going to find Titan. Now, you'll remember earlier in the game, you already fought Titan at Agard, so there you find him again. But this one's kind of cool because if you rescue Porom before this fight, and when you rescue these people, you don't actually gain them in your party, but you put them in the ship. But Porom will run out of the ship and cast Float on you right as Titan is using his Quake ability. That's important because Titan just like opens up a hole in the ground. And if you have not rescued Porom, then you're going to fall into a dungeon that you have to fight your way out of. But if you rescue Porom, then you're going to float and not fall in. And then you'll be able to fight, you know, finish the fight with Titan right then and there instead of having to climb your way out and then finish him. So after all of that, then you can go back to Mist, and that's where the Mist Dragon is going to rejoin Rydian. So now you've gotten six Eidolons left, and you can go back to Baron Castle. Cedor's party is going to fight Cecil, and Odin is going to join Cecil, but Odin regains his senses and then kind of smacks Cecil around too, who then also comes to his senses. But Cecil is like super weak at this point, but Cedor joins with the other ones to, well, not the other ones, I should say, Cedor, Rydia, Golbez, Rose, and Edge, which is actually a pretty fantastic party, go in to fight the mysterious girl. And she dies again, but more of her appear. And if you haven't gotten the impression that she's more of a problem than you thought beforehand, you should get that impression now. The other ones tell the party that they're going to be waiting for them on the true moon. And this is the battle that ends the first section of this game. And the second section of the game is a good old-fashioned dungeon crawler, and it's massive. It's huge. It's not going to take a ton of time to go through because it is it's not very plot heavy. The plot is advanced through mostly campfire scenes. So every time you get to a save point, you get like, most of the time I should say, you get a free rest there. And they'll have like a little dialogue scene that happens. Most of it is pretty standard. It's like, you know, developing relationships. So Cedor really looks up to Cain, and Cain helps him. Cain's kind of helping him kind of like work through his feelings toward his family. And Cain and Golbez has this super awkward scene that doesn't almost do anything. But then you also learn that Luca is really kind of getting over Palom, but that Leonardo's kind of into him, and it's stuff like that. And there's a lot of stuff like that. But you can now choose your entire party and just pick who you want to. There will be some points where you need a specific person, but not many. And those people are pretty obvious. But the one thing to realize up front is that the true moon is not the red moon. And we've kind of always thought that it was, up until now. But it's not. This is something different. And as you start going through it, you're going to realize that it is something different, that it's not the same thing. So Cecil at the very beginning is pretty worthless. All of his stats are just raised down to like 10 or something. It's ridiculous. But you're going to go down into the thing, and you're going to find these crystals scattered about, and everyone, all of them crack into this boss fight. But the culminating battle in the part one of the True Moon is that Cecil has to face off with Dark Knight Cecil. And this is one of the points where you really need certain party members. You need Cecil in your party, and you need Golbez. Because there's going to be a point where Dark Knight Cecil knocks everybody down and then starts just attacking things. And if you don't have Cecil in the party to protect everyone, you will die. But if Cecil's there, then he'll suddenly jump out and he'll block all of these attacks against everybody else. But then the Dark Knight Cecil turns his attack towards Cecil directly. And that's where you need Golbez, because Golbez will then jump in front of that attack and protect Cecil. Again, if you don't have Golbez, you will die. This is a scripted battle. You have to have them. And so once you get through that, then Cecil regains his strength, and now you can use him as a full party member who can break things and cause havoc. But you know, it's just a matter of kind of who you want to use from here on out. You'll also want Rydia in here, because there's going to be sections where you can now get back Asura and Leviathan, and if Rydia is there, then you can tame them. And you do want to do that because they will become important later. The next thing you're going to notice is that as you're going down, these crystals are breaking. The first thing you're going to fight are the Archfiends. And so there's a little bit of confusion, like, weren't y'all dead? And it's very clear that they don't want to be there. They don't want to be having this fight. They're like being forced into it. If you have Edge in your party, then you can fight Rubicante solo. And there's some bonuses to that, but it's like, you know, just putting an end to that rivalry. And these Archfiends are like thanking you for ending them. And it's really, really super weird. But then you get down to yet another, like another boss rush. And these boss rushes are usually like on one level, you'll have four of them. And the next one you get to are all the elemental fiends from Final Fantasy I. And you're going to fight all of them. And then you get four major enemies from Final Fantasy II, and then three. And then you're fighting like Gilgamesh from Final Fantasy V, and then you're fighting enemies from Final Fantasy VI. And I won't go into all the details on these, but it's like, it's now becoming really weird now that like all of these things are now combining, and you've noticed that you're counting too many crystals at this point. There's a lot of crystals, and like way more than our original crystals have broken and attacked us. This thing just keeps going. This whole section of the game is a very, very, very long old fashioned dungeon crawler. And so there's not, like I said, there's not a ton of plot here, but it's very, very challenging. It is very, very hard. And it requires some patience in figuring out like all these massive enemies that you have not fought before, how they're going to be approached. This section has new music. It is very new and very, very different. So finally you get down to the mysterious girl who summons Bahamut. And if you have Asura and Leviathan, they will just suddenly insert themselves into the battle and turn Bahamut so that he comes to his senses and attacks the mysterious girl. And then you'll have Bahamut. So great. But as you go through, you see this basically room filled with the mysterious girl. And they reveal that their name is Maenad. And a lot of them are like in these stasis pods. And they're just like these countless clones of one another. If you play, you know, and a little bit more is explained about them in the interlude, which we'll talk about next week. So I'm not going to give this part away yet, but they are essentially clones. They're creations, to help collect the crystals. The last one you encounter is a child version, like the newest one that's still growing up, and the child and they're all asking you, it's like, okay, what do we do now? And you're telling them, okay, well, just stand here. And they're like, okay. And the child helps you get through the door to the final boss. Now, the final boss is this entity, and you finally discover what in the world all of this is about. This guy calls himself the Creator. And he's like this thing, this creature from an ancient and old race who is essentially the creator of not just the crystals of Final Fantasy IV, but of all Final Fantasy games. And the reason that you fought all the villains from the first six Final Fantasy games, which are the Final Fantasy games with crystals, is because all of these crystals have come from the same place. And what these crystals are doing is not only guiding evolution, but it's also like this data recording device that is collecting data about the evolution on all these planets and delivering them back to this thing, the creator. He sees himself as the architect of all of these worlds and all of these stories. And he created the Maenads to come collect the crystals, but he's kind of done with everybody. And since he views everybody as his just creation, he now is like, okay, well, now I'm done with y'all. I've gotten everything I wanted out of this. And so, we're going to wipe you out. And, which of course now you're going to have to fight the space god, which, you know, is very often the point of JRPGs. And so you have this battle against them. Of course you win, but then you have the true moon starts taking itself apart and you have to leave. You have to escape. And so you're leaving, but the creator keeps coming up behind you and attacking you from behind, but it's like coming apart. It's destroying itself. So every time it attacks, it's like taking massive damage and it's just, like exploding on itself. And so the real battle's over. It's dying now, but it's like flailing at you. And then when you get to the room of the Maenads, they turn against the creator at this point, and they start to protect you in order to let you out. And they tell you to take the youngest one, the youngest Maenad, and to escape. And so you get this young Maenad with you while the other Maenads are sacrificing themselves, to let you out. And so the last thing that happens is one of the Maenads casts meteor on it and destroys the creator, but destroys everything else with it. The true moon departs and the lunar whale returns to Earth with everybody. And that brings us kind of to this end sequence, which has these like really great like little cameo roles by these ninjas. So like when it goes to Troia, Izayoi is like watching over everything from the corner. It is great. But the Ipops are now offering Leonora a full position, but she declines it and she says she's going to leave. Leonora heads to Mysidia. Palom and Porom are talking to the elder, who's sick again, and Palom says he's decided to stay because Mysidia needs him. And the elder's like, finally you're realizing where you belong in this world. And so the elder retires and leaves the city in their two hands, in both Palom and Porom's hand. Leonora appears there and, kind of in this awkwardly flirty way with characters who are in their late 20s but act like they're, 15. She tells them that she wants to continue her training because she wants to become a sage. And so they're able to kind of all stay together there, and they accept Leonora as students for both of them. But we know why she's really there. And of course then it fades over, and Sukunawa is once again disguised as a frog and is spying on him. It's great. Cuts down to the Dwarven Castle, and Zangozu's there in disguise. He missays his Laliho again, and the other dwarves scold him. But Cid and Luca are trying to work on an airship, and just continue that relationship. But now they're joined by Mid, who is Cid's grandson, who is going to also help, I guess, follow in his grandfather's footsteps. Over in Fabul, Yang is training Ursula directly, and Gakao is there to, you know, just watching on. Then it cuts over to Damsian, and Edward and Harley have a pleasant conversation about the nature of crystals and such. Actually, this is one of the nice things about the ending of this game is that a lot of relationships are implied but not said outright, and I kind of like that you know that the flirting shall continue, but Edward seems to start coming to his senses, and even though he's like 40 plus years old at this point, he is finally getting over Anna and moving on with his life as king. They start talking about, you know, gathering materials because Cecil has a plan just to kind of rebuild after all the destruction of the world, because remember, you know, this planet has been turned into Swiss cheese at this point, and so all the kings are kind of getting together to put things together, and so they're about to leave to do that, but then Edward sees the spirits of Tella and Anna and kind of has a goodbye for them, and it's really nice. Edge has this great part where he's going off to Myst, but he's met by the four ninjas who all come back in and report in on their different areas of spying and everything that's going on. He's like, whatever, y'all, why don't y'all go like live your lives, and you know, everything's fine, everything's good, just go do things that you wanted to do. And they all tell him that what they want to do is to continue being Eblin ninjas, and his response is, okay, that whatever, if that's what you want to do, fine. And at that point, Iziel comes forward and says, thank you for the kind words, sir. We won't fail you. And he's like, whatever. He just leaves. It cuts over to Myst, and this is where we find the young mysterious girl, I guess now a mysterious child, who is now outside and playing with other children in the town. And she has been renamed to Kyore, and all of a sudden these two visitors arrive, and so they go to the house, and Rydia is there, and it is, the visitors are Leviathan and Asura, and they tell her, it's like, well, you can't come to the Fae March anymore, but that just means that we need to come visit you. And so they start talking about Myst, but that's when Edge comes to see Rydia, and Asura says, it's like, well, we're the ones who invited him. And once again, we have the implication of a long-awaited relationship, but it never says anything, which is kind of pretty cool. Cutting over to Baron, we find out that Kane is now the new leader of the Red Wings, and he tells Theodore that we're gonna go off into this quest to travel around rebuilding things and helping people from the worldwide disaster, and they are actually disarming the airships directly, so that they won't carry weapons anymore. And they cut away, and we get a little bit of Kane's leadership style as he's making sure that Theodore is working hard and standing at attention and all that good jazz. Rosa and Cecil are left wondering about Golbez, who has taken the lunar whale to go look for Fusoya and the other Lunarians to see if they are there. When we left the Red Moon, you know, Zeromas was really wreaking havoc, and we did not see the end of that battle. And so it could be that the whole thing is destroyed, but we don't actually know that. That is a question that is left for another time, or never, you know, because, I think this is, you know, chronologically, this is the last game. They did add the interlude later for the complete collection, but we have now come to the conclusion of the Final Fantasy IV saga, and I'll say again, it's like once the game gets revved up, I really, really, really like it. I really like the new characters. The battle system and the graphics remain the same. And of course, these are things that I adore. And the music is back, but the new songs are really, really good. The Uematsu didn't do the new songs, but they're very worthy of being a part of this game and sitting alongside of Uematsu's original soundtrack. And so, despite some very real complaints and some very serious complaints with the game, I ended up being very, very satisfied with the game. And even though we're done with talking about it, I do intend to continuing till the end. Even though I've seen it all, that last dungeon grind, it really, really does look very, very cool and amazing. And it's massive, and it really does seem like a really great tip of the hat to some of these old original RPGs, which is these amazing dungeon crawls and all the monsters from the old Final Fantasy games. It is a massive tribute, as well as an effort to kind of put all of these games in a shared universe, in a way that is not foreign to Final Fantasy. You know, even from game number one, we have this medieval setting that turns to science fiction very quickly. And suddenly, and all of a sudden there's time travel, and all of a sudden there's spaceships and stuff. And that's been a tradition in Final Fantasy. And so this isn't foreign to that. It's, it is a continuation of that tradition. And so all in all, I'm very, very satisfied. If you are going to play this game, please do keep in mind that the beginning is a slog, and there's nothing... I mean, I don't know if there's some tricks to kind of get through it quicker than I did, just to blow through it. But once you really start getting into the meat of everyone's story, it gets pretty cool. And some of the ideas, like we really didn't have time to get into the idea of what Kane is going through. And you know, just this great, great image of, yes, we know what that trial is on the top of Mount Ordeals, but we don't know what happens if you fail it. And this is what happens. And it's like, it's dark and epic, and it's really neat. And so once again, I'm very glad we covered this game, because that finally pushed me into playing it, and it is a game that I absolutely loved. If you're only going to play one of the games, it needs to be just Final Fantasy IV. Final Fantasy IV is the superior game, for sure. But if that's something you loved, or if it's something that you've played many times and you don't mind going through these dungeons again, because a lot of these dungeons, like that stupid waterway between Kaipo and Damsian, you're gonna go through again, and it's the same dungeon. And that particular waterway, you're gonna go through several times. Some of the dungeons are the same, but they've been changed. Like the Cave of Mist, it's been greatly expanded, and it's a good dungeon. The stuff that they've added has been really solid, and really interesting. And so if this is, you know, if Final Fantasy IV is something that is near and dear to your heart, then I'd give it a try. I just with that understanding that it's going to be difficult at the beginning to get through. But I think it's well worth it by the end. And I've been talking for a very long time.
We went off air 30 minutes ago.
Dang it, Drum! Why didn't you tell me my throat is all... dry.
Well, you were determined to finish it.
Anyways, it doesn't matter. Oh, goodness. Let's just turn on the music. I need to go get some water. I'm going to get some water.
Retro Zoo Super Show is brought to you by the Technopunk Boy. Follow us on Twitter at Technopunk Boy, on Facebook at the Technopunk Boy, and sign up for our email list at technopunkboy.com. Also look for us on Spotify, iTunes, and Amazon for music. If you are so inclined, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on your favorite podcast catcher. If you are not so inclined, you are obviously some sort of villain trying to conquer the world. Unowned music and gameplay clips are used for educational and critical purposes. Thank you for listening. Keep gaming. And once you have responsibilities that need to be done at this time, then you can game later.